You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Jeff and Eric were walking through the woods one night. That's right. When they saw something giving off an eerie light. So bright. Turned out it was an alien meteorite. That's right. And its radiation beams superhuman in sight. So bright.
And on that day, they vowed to use their powers for good instead of evil, swearing to protect mankind from the vile clutches of their evil arch-nemesis, Bad Cinema. And if you find yourself in a bind at the multiplex, not sure what to watch, you too can call on
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Hello. Welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I'm your host, Jeff Bear. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hi, everybody. I'm Eric D. Snyder. That over there is Jeff Bear, and it's Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, the only movie podcast on the internet, brought to you by OneOfUs.net.
The only net on the internet.
Sure. Welcome to the show, everybody. Summer's half over.
What?
Well, I mean, the summer movie season anyway, May and June, And then we still have July and August.
You just made me equally excited and nervous. I'm excited for the fall because I'm kind of sort of getting rid of one of my kids.
Right.
But I really like the summer, and I like Portland summer. So there we go.
That's life, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
You take the good, you take the bad.
What if you ever were to take them both?
Well, there you'd have the facts of life.
That's true.
Speaking of catchy songs, let's talk about Baby Driver.
Baby Driver.
Sadly, not about a baby who drives, unfortunately.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with Boss Baby.
No.
Just thinking like, oh, you see baby in the title, you know what you're getting at this point? No?
Actually, there is a baby in this movie for a minute, but not long. It's not about the baby, but it's about a guy named Baby. And it's directed by Edgar Wright, who made Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And who made those movies with the Hot Fuzz guys? Those two? Simon Pegg yeah. and Nick Frost.
Right, right. Shaun of the Dead, At World's End.
Yeah, and Hot Fuzz.
At World's End.
And now this. And this is doesn't have any of those other people in it.
Not even little cameos or anything.
No, totally different thing.
Look at that. Moving on.
And it's about this. This movie is like a lighthearted musical version of Drive. With Ryan Gosling.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I was like, oh, I hope he says this movie.
It's like totally. but more openly fun. You got Ansel Elgort stars. Ansel Elgort is Baby.
And this baby can drive.
He's a baby-faced getaway driver. They call him Baby because he's young and because he doesn't talk much.
Mm-hmm. And he's also kind of carefree. A little bit. Loves his music. We find out he's got a decent reason why that he's always listening, always guarded with sunglasses and iPods.
Always got earbuds and listening to music. And that's kind of the hook of the movie is that we generally also hear the music he's listening to. And so almost the entire film has music, soundtrack, pop songs playing. Some very
sometimes
toe-tapping ones.
I was just going to say, sometimes you're toe-tapping, and sometimes, on occasion, even the characters are playfully mm-hmm. toe-tapping as mm-hmm. well, which is, it's really got this kind of sweet, adorable quality in this somewhat gritty world. Like, we've seen, obviously, more gritty on the big screen, but nonetheless, we know that Baby is compelled to be out of this element, and he'd rather be elsewhere. And it's also, you're not going to believe this. Very early on, this young kid only has one more job to do.
Just one more job. He works for Kevin Spacey, who is a cocaine distributor and a bank robber. And they call him Doc. And Doc, the way he refers to it is that he has people who have to work for him because they have, as he calls it, nasal problems. So there's many people that he owns or has leverage on who are compelled to, do these robberies for him. Baby is one of them. Baby doesn't have a nasal problem, but he did run afoul of Doc at one point and now owes him. So yeah, he's supposedly got one more job, then he's out. He meets a diner waitress, played by Lily James.
Yeah.
And he wants to go off with her. It's a simple setup. This man, this guy who wants out of this life, wants a regular life. He's an orphan. He's got an old foster dad, an old black deaf guy in a wheelchair who he takes care of. And that's it. But then there's, you know, trouble. There's trouble on those last jobs.
There is trouble on those last jobs. There's a couple of weird things and a couple of cool things. One, it took me just a little bit of time to think the movie was as cool as it thinks it is. Like, it's definitely one of those movies you're going into where, like, I wonder if it will be that Dry vibe or a Quentin Tarantino vibe or if it'll have an edge to it or something like that. And it's kind of like Edgar Wright playing with his sensibilities that brought Scott Pilgrim to life with those other elements. And Kevin Spacey wins me over first in this movie, mainly because he's got a line while he's getting a job together in front of a chalkboard that just like nails it. Like I'm hooked on him, and then I'm falling in love with everybody else as we go along. And Jamie Foxx, John Hamm, both do good jobs.
They're members of the crew that do the robberies.
That's right. Good jobs that get a little bit better as the movie goes along for me. Like at first I'm just like, oh shoot, I want to love John Hamm. And I get there with all of these characters eventually.
Baby, you know, accepts that he has to be the getaway driver. He's never involved in the robberies, and he is not involved in any violence. And he's surprised, kind of naively surprised to see that some of his coworkers are not afraid of violence. And that bothers him.
Yeah. And he's also kind of like, he feels like, well, I got to do this. I just won't look at it, and that'll be enough.
Right.
Kind of thing, as far as the violent world that he's a part of.
And then it eventually turns violent, and lots of vehicular mayhem and driving around and very cool stuff with that. And all through it is the music. And the way that it's all put together from a techno standpoint is very, very cool, where encapsulated in the opening credit sequence where Baby is strutting down the street listening to Harlem Shuffle. And the way that he walks is synced in time with the music. As he's walking down the sidewalk, we'll see snippets of the lyrics from the song appearing in graffiti or on flyers on telephone poles or stuff, things like that. And throughout the film, there's often moments like that where the sound of the gunfire or the trunk door slamming is timed with the music. And it just gives it all, it makes it feel like a musical, even though it's not the kind of musical where there are people singing. But it definitely has that. It is a musical film.
It made me think. It made me think. Oh, this is going to be a good rewatch. Like this will be fun to do another time to notice a little bit more, because it did feel like Edgar Wright was playing with a lot of elements to make this and pull this off.
Because it's all so well choreographed and so well put together, as most of his films are. This one doesn't do as much as some of the others have, where there'll be lines of dialogue that'll pop up later and have meaning. There's a few good examples, but it's not like it. Remember how in Hot Fuzz, like every line was setting up something later on?
Right.
It's not like that.
And Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of
the Dead did that too. And actually didn't. I think all three of those did.
I think
that.
They did. So this isn't as much of that, but it's all. But it is really well crafted. Again, from this technical sense, with the editing and the music and everything all put together, just a lot of fun.
It is. There was, for me, some of the things that stood out as ordinary or almost a mistake, which was really weird that it was a mistake, and I kind of want to run it by you. First, the ordinary was the reason that Deborah and Baby are maybe like star-crossed lovers. Like it was just the simple thing. Like it didn't have even the motivation of like true romance
star-crossed lovers.
Or not star-crossed, but like, they just want to be together. Like, okay, fine, right. Deborah, like we've established it. We don't know much about Deborah. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
I don't understand. I don't understand what you're saying. What do you mean? The reason they wanted to be together?
It was simplistic. Because like it wasn't very compelling.
What was the reason? Tell me what it was. I'll cut it if we have to.
The reason they were together?
Other than that they liked each other?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
It was just because. I mean, I just didn't think it was like an amazing world building, like that these two would end up together and go to the lengths to be together.
It
was just fine.
That's what happens. That's what you do. That's what people meet. They like each other. That's perfect.
Here was two different things that were weird. Doc, Kevin Spacey's character, tells Baby that he'd been calling him for a long time.
Yeah.
And Baby's response was, "You have." And it actually looked like you have. Like he was surprised to know that. That was weird.
Yeah, we had seen him ignore one call.
Yeah. That was a tiny thing that was weird. And then the other tiny thing that was weird was Doc specifically says he never works with the same team. He makes sure to never work with the same team, but then we see that's not the case either.
I think he meant the same exact team, the same combination of people.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
I noticed that.
And those
too.
Were just tiny little things.
I think it's a lot of fun. It gets violent without being too bloody. It's a little bit, like I said, a lighter version of Drive, and also a lighter version of a Tarantino movie. There are a few specific things where I thought, oh, if this were Tarantino, that person would have died, or that would have happened in a worse way, or something. And it's a little bit gentler than that. I give Baby Driver a B+.
I give Baby Driver an 8 out of 10.
BS approved.
BS approved.
Good job, Baby Driver. Now let's talk about a movie called Despicable Me. Wait for it. 3.
This is sponsored by fake sponsor Big Juicy IPA. That's right, Big Juicy.
If I know anything about you, I know you like a Big Juicy IPA.
Oh my, I sure do.
Despicable Me 3. This is it. It's not the third. It's the fourth. It's the fourth one of these movies because we're counting Minions.
Yeah, we can count Minions. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it feels like the eighth or ninth. I have to say,
here's what I have to say. Going into it, that's how I felt. The beginning's kind of fun.
Yeah,
it's a good start.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. But then the last 3 hours drag a bit.
Oh, come on!
I know it's mostly fine. It's mostly more than anything else. It's like a gentle family sitcom.
It's like a
special TV movie. The Gru family goes to Fredonia.
Yeah.
And so everyone gets their own little irrelevant subplot.
Totally irrelevant subplot.
Completely useless, but they got to give them something to do.
Some of them, it's like, hey, for some reason, one of the adopted girls needs a 2-minute storyline. Another one needs a 5-minute storyline.
Right.
And like, it feels like separate writers go to their own different corners, come up with something, bring it all back together, and then
And you've got
we enjoy or don't enjoy it.
You've got your A stories and B stories and C stories. Everyone's doing their own thing, and the main thing is that Gru and Lucy are married now. I forgot they got married, or did they get married between movies?
They got married.
Okay, all right, they're married, and so now she's the stepmom to the three girls. And also, turns out now Gru has a twin brother.
It is so convenient. I kind of love it because it does seem like in that regard. The movie is willing to laugh at itself a little bit.
Like, and, sure, we got to come up with something for the third one. Yeah,
right.
His name is
Drew. It is Steve Carell doing both voices, right?
Yes, his name is Drew, and the other guy, he lives in Fredonia, which, by the way, is the fictional country in Duck Soup, the Marx Brothers movie.
That's weird.
Yeah, I guess it's just a random nod to that. Lives in this funny foreign country where they have a different kind of funny accent from Gru's.
Yeah,
and. Here's the thing. The actual story, there's a villain. There's a villain left over from the 80s. He's an 80s child sitcom actor who grew up to be a villain.
He's definitely the best thing going as far as an idea.
Yeah.
Named Balthazar
Brat.
He can't help but breakdance during his heists and whatnot.
Yeah, he's voiced by Trey Parker. Which is why he sounds like everybody on South Park. I wonder if that was a money thing, like rather than hire an expensive actor. Because other than Steve Carell, Kristen Wiig, they got Julie Andrews doing a part, for crying out loud. Anyway, but so he has, this is the villain, and he wants to destroy Hollywood because he's mad at Hollywood. But then most of the movie is Gru and his brother, and that is none of that really even, it's funny, some of it. There's a really funny scene where they impersonate each other.
There's a very I was shocked at how much I enjoyed that scene because it is it's lowbrow humor, like it's silly, stupid, self-aware humor that it just really tickled me in the moment.
Because Steve Carell does a really good job voicing the two different characters differently enough, and then to hear him do one impersonate and the other is
and just the kids groaning or like being like what do they think is so funny, like all of that. Yeah,
there's some good stuff there, but. Like, the basic relationship of Gru and Drew, the conflict is that Gru is a good guy now, doesn't want to be a villain, but Drew wants to carry on the family legacy of being a villain, and that's what they fight about. And just this whole thing with this movie, these movies are built on, where he's a villain, but he's not a bad person. It's a difficult reality to sustain.
It is, considering they wanted to take care of it in the first one and did take care of it in
right,
the first one.
Right, and then had to make sequels. And so now we've got, now Gru and his brother, that's their conflict is that Dru wants to be a villain. And it doesn't work. I don't care.
It doesn't work. There could have been plenty of other angles to take with that. There was one nice part, which was Gru's idea was like, okay, you want to be a villain? Let's cut the idea out that I'm going to turn bad, and I just got to get this diamond away from this other villain, that'll be what we do.
That was
nice, but like, you're right. There was no emotional turmoil to be had with this idea of like good and bad, and what does it mean to be good and bad, and what do you really want to accomplish by being a villain?
And what is Dru's character? What is Dru's personality?
Blonde hair.
Yeah, he has hair. and he's rich. He's rich. He lives in a mansion in Fredonia.
He's rich, and he would like to make his dead dad proud.
Right, by being a villain. But he himself is not, like, mean or villainous or anything.
Nope.
I think that's like, my problem. All these movies, I keep getting stuck on that, of these people who supposedly are villains, but who won't do anything bad.
Yeah, even the minions are silly. They're just silly things as opposed to wanting to do evil.
Here's what the minions do in this movie. They leave. They're disappointed that Gru is still not being bad. So they leave and they walk to Hollywood for some reason and barge onto a TV show and get thrown in prison for that and then escape from prison. That's what the minions do in this movie. You could cut out every frame of Minion from the film and not have to change anything, hardly.
Well, it is really, truly, like, as you were saying, kind of that, like, easy sitcom, it's the Minions are the Urkel.
Right, yeah, you give them something to do that's kind of unrelated to everything else, and it's pleasant enough, and it had a few laughs.
It did. It definitely had this is the thing for me. I didn't care. Of course you don't care.
Right.
But I laughed more, probably combined, to the other three films. That's how it felt to me. Like, it felt like there was more...
Say that again.
Okay. Me and Me Too and Minions are less than the laughs that I had in Me 3.
You laughed more in this than you did in the other films combined.
I think so, yes.
All right.
And I didn't groan as much. Like just legitimate, like, annoyance did not occur... frequently,
yeah. I wasn't annoyed with this one particularly. I sometimes have been with the others. I don't remember.
The little girl, the tiny little one with the adorable eyes, Agnes, is that her?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, sure. She was my hope in the first one for like just do more with her, please. Like, because that's good, that's cute, that's fun. And here with her like passion for unicorns. Yeah, it was adorable. Like, that was a side plot that at least was adorable. Sure, of course it can be cut.
It was
it's pointless.
Sure, it was a fine episode of TGIF on ABC that you paid $1,000 to take your family to.
No, I didn't.
I don't remember. I don't remember what I gave the others, so I don't know if this is better or worse. But I give Despicable Me 3 a C.
I give it a 6. It's a 6 out of 10. It's and more importantly, I had a kid next to me that was mine. And when one of the girls, again, I don't care who, one of them said, "Good night, Mom," or "I love you, Mom." And Dylan decided at that point to turn to me and hug me. So I was like, all right, I'm going to bump this movie up a grade.
That's cute. That's cute. The Beguiled is a movie that I saw, but you didn't.
I wanted to. Just didn't work out.
You wouldn't like it. I'll tell you everything about it.
Are you being serious? Wait, are you doing the Sparks treatment? Is that what you're saying?
No, no. No, I liked it. I liked it. I'm saying you wouldn't. I'm 50-50 on that. Maybe you would. Maybe.
All right.
It's a remake of a film from 1971 that had Clint Eastwood.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't like it. You're right.
Same year that Dirty Harry came out.
Okay.
What if Sofia Coppola had remade Dirty Harry instead of this? That would have been something.
Oh, is it like that was it? She had to choose from some Clint movie?
Clint Eastwood and same director, Don Siegel.
Oh, really?
Beguiled and Dirty Harry both in 71.
Oh, that's a surprise. Okay.
Sofia Coppola has this remake. She makes it her own and gives it more of a female perspective, which makes sense, and which the book that it's based on, I think, already had. It's set it's during the Civil War, 1864, down in the South, somewhere in Mississippi, I think, and a girl's boarding school, mostly deserted because the war's going on. They got Nicole Kidman is the headmistress and Kirsten Dunst, the teacher, and then they got five teenage students, girls. And they find a wounded Union soldier, played by Colin Farrell.
Oh, no Southern accent for Colin?
No, he's Irish. He is Irish and charming. And he's wounded, and so they bring him in. Of course, he's the enemy. And so some of the girls are like, we should call our Confederate troops, have them take him away. But they realize if they take him away now, he will just die in a prisoner of war in a prison. And so the Christian thing to do would be to nurse him back to health. And then we can turn him over to the authorities.
So now I got a feeling that a couple of ladies finding a Colin Farrell, some of them might want to keep him for themselves.
That's the thing here is, and Sofia Coppola is not afraid to play that up. The camera lingers over his body. Nicole Kidman, the headmistress, gives him a sponge bath at one point, and you can see her trying to tamp down her feelings. And of course, it's hot and southern and mossy, and it's got that whole I do declare kind of feel to it.
Does anybody have lemonade?
I do believe I'm coming down with the vapors. And so, a delicate balance is struck where they're kind of okay with this quote-unquote enemy being in their home, and they're kind of warming up to him, and he's being nice to them. And so you know that something's going to happen to upset this delicate balance.
Now, have you even brought up Kirsten Dunst and Elle Fanning?
Elle Fanning is the oldest of the students, yeah.
Okay. And I'm assuming these three women are the clear leads of the film,
they're the main ones, yeah.
Yeah.
And Elle Fanning, who is one of the students, but she's old enough that her flirtation with the wounded soldier is more than just like a schoolgirl crush. Like this could be something serious we need to think about here. And so when things do go wrong, which they do, there's room for discussion on whose fault it is, on who has beguiled whom here. And I think that's one interesting part of it is that when it's all said and done and you're looking to lay blame at who made things go wrong here, I think there's some blame to go around. And I wonder if it would split on gender lines of whose fault ultimately you think it is. If you've seen the original, which is on HBO Go, by the way, if you do want to see the original, and it's also good. It's pretty much the same plot, but it is more the female perspective here and how the presence of this man affects them. It moves slowly for a while. And I don't know. I like the way it ends, but I don't know that I don't know that everyone will.
Okay. Moves slowly. Like, do you feel like it's longer than the hour and a half running time?
No, I mean, it fills that hour and a half. I wasn't bored with it ever, but it does have this languorous pace. Like you think of the South in the summertime and just kind of, moving slowly and all that, like molasses. But I like the way that the women interact. And Nicole Kidman really is such a good performance. So much.
Is she the standout here?
Kirsten Dunst is also very good. They're all good. That's the thing. It's a really well acted ensemble. Dealing with these issues without really talking about them overtly a lot. A lot of it is subtext, but it all turns out quite entertaining. Entertaining and edifying. And I give it a B. B for beguiled. Right.
I shall see it one day.
When you get a screener at the end of the year.
That's right.
And there's also a movie that came out a few weeks ago when there was a screening and we didn't go to it. And I didn't even know it was a wide release. And then it turns out it was. And it's called Megan Levy.
Yeah, what's this one all about?
Well, it's about Megan Levy.
Go on.
Well, you know how there's Marines, like in the military?
Thank you.
Yeah. this is a true story. It's boats, based on a true story. Megan Levy, played by Kate Mara.
Ooh, I do like her.
Mm-hmm. And she joins the Marines because she got nothing else to do. This is like 2003 or 4, wartime. She goes to
Hang on, is this a normal movie or is there like an agenda with this movie? Is this an agenda film?
Not an agenda film.
Oh!
It's a normal movie.
That's totally what I thought it was like. I don't know why. Maybe because of the way that it was slightly promoted to us or something. I just thought there was...
Thought it was like religious?
Like that, where it's like, hey, this is a piece of propaganda. Please enjoy it.
Well, it's sort of a pro-dog propaganda.
Whoa!
Because she becomes a dog handler there with the Marines to do the bomb-sniffing dogs.
So you're saying the Marines won't let her hang out with the other soldiers, she has to hang out with dogs? That's pretty sexist.
Not the case.
Oh.
But it's about her and her dog, who's such a good boy. He's such a good boy. His name is Rex.
What kind of dog is he?
He's a German Shepherd.
Cool.
Yeah. And it's about their adventures together. And it's a very simple movie, but it's very well told. It's well put together and not shameless in the way it makes you cry. It'll make you cry, but like in a good, happy way. Really nice, inspiring story about this lady and the dog that she loved and their struggles together.
I understand if you don't want to spoil this, mm-hmm. but you did mention crying.
Yeah.
Is this a Turner and Hooch situation that we might be dealing with here?
Well, do you remember the thing I said after that it makes you cry? That
I tuned out.
It's a good, happy cry.
Okay.
It's emotionally affecting, okay. but in a positive
way. Well, I didn't
way.
Know, because you own a cat, I didn't know if you were like, it's kind of happy, the dog gets it in the end.
No,
I didn't know if it was one of those things.
I love dogs. You're well aware of that. How dare you? Megan Levy, it's good. It's still in theaters. And they do a good job of showing like the grittiness and the horrors of war without being graphic. Like it's still very pretty tame, PG-13.
Okay.
But yeah, it's good. Quite good. I get a nice solid B, that Megan Levy.
Huh.
Take your mom. It's a good mom movie.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah. I know your mom loves loves war. DVDs this week. There's a couple that are okay. Kind of.
I think that's a good assessment.
Best I can do. T2 Trainspotting, which I think I liked more than you did.
Yeah, I eventually was
thrilled with it. You give it a 6.
Yeah.
I give it a B.
I didn't need it to exist, is what it came down to.
Chips, which bombed and they hid from critics, but I gave it a B-. You gave it a 7. We had fun with Chips.
This is I would recommend, when you do watch Chips because you like laughter, maybe be slightly under the influence of whatever your choice is.
Couldn't hurt.
It might help the mood.
Couldn't hurt. And then Power Rangers, you didn't see Power Rangers, right?
No. But Bryan Cranston is in it, right?
Yes, his voice is. Yeah. It's not good. It got a C. I saw the other day where the director thinks that the PG-13 rating hurt it. Because parents weren't sure if they could bring their kids to it, if it was safe to bring their kids to. I'm like,
oh, so he thinks it should have been PG.
Yeah, he thinks it would have done better if it had been a PG movie. Which means he has not been to movie theaters lately to see the movies that people take their kids to.
Well, no kids see any of the superhero movies. That's the nice thing. Because they're slapped with that PG-13, and the parents are like, you're staying home.
Yeah, no.
I'll go see it, and then I'll just describe mm-hmm. the nice parts when I get mm-hmm. back.
Yeah. So I think that director was mistaken, and the movie didn't do well because it's not good.
Elizabeth Banks is in it, right?
Sure.
Wow, you do not want to. Okay, what else?
It doesn't matter if she's in it, does it? Right. It's not a good movie.
Normally you would say it does matter if she's in something.
I mean, I'm sure if she is in it, that sounds familiar that she's in it.
Wait a minute. Good. I actually don't know. Did you see it or did you not see it?
I saw it. I gave it a C. It's not good.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't know why listing who's in it will make it better.
No. I just because it was there was a tidbit of this is exciting. She's going to play the crazy villain. That could be fun. Whenever it was announced forever ago.
Yeah.
And then the Belko experiment,
which is also that one's bad. That movie's mean. It's mean and gross.
Wish it wasn't.
Yeah.
I wish it was the. Yeah, it totally would be that idea where you're like, no, Jeff, you should see it. That's what I wanted to hear with the Belko. Mm. I wanted you to take the bullet or the axe or whatever they do to kill people in
all
that movie.
All of those.
And then what's the worst way somebody dies in that movie? Does a door shut on somebody?
I don't remember. It's mostly headshots.
Oh, like glamour, like mm-hmm, mm-hmm. fashion stuff?
That's right.
That's cool.
That's right.
That's a twist.
So there's the DVDs.
Oh, very exciting news.
What's that?
Speaking of DVDs, somebody finally claimed
My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2.
Yes.
I know,
there
I saw that. Good.
So that has been claimed. And so now we have another Blu-ray that's not good. There's a moment or two, but if you like Melissa McCarthy, maybe you want to own The Boss.
So if you want a copy of The Boss and you're an agent, send us an email. First come, first serve.
Yep.
It took a week for anybody to claim that, my big fat Greek wedding, too.
I know. I had forgotten all about it.
Yeah.
But, like, honestly, when I saw the email, like, somebody wanting it, I felt a little joy. I was like, oh, we get to make somebody happy. I don't like the way that they're going to be happy, but like, whatever.
It makes you happy because you get to get rid of it.
Yep. Happiness all around.
Now let's update the summer box office challenge. It's getting hot.
Yeah, let's do that. Because I feel like there's a you and the fake news media feel like they're spreading some stories here, and I don't care for the tone of some of these angles that are being taken.
You had Transformers the last night, which made $44.6 million Friday through Sunday.
It's a shame.
The lowest of the franchise.
Easily the lowest of the franchise. Keep in mind the one from 2013, Age of Extinction, opened at 100 million and terrible reviews for its weekend.
Yeah.
So that's what I was basing on. I thought it was bulletproof. I was wrong, and I'm happy I'm wrong. Like, that's the weird thing. I'm happy that Wonder Woman made so much money. I'm happy that Transformers didn't. Mm-hmm. And I also hate life because of these things that have happened. So it's this weird mix of emotions.
It's a real roller coaster over there.
It is.
Your total,
but like, yeah, go ahead with the totals.
Your total now, after three movies, is just over 100 million. You cracked 100 million.
I did it.
And I've had seven movies open so far, and they total 437.5 million. So you're 337 million behind. You have seven movies left to open, and I have three movies left to open.
Now, people have decided I've lost. There's no way that I can win. That seems to be the majority
of the consensus. Yeah, not everyone, but that's the consensus.
Yeah, I literally think there was one because, like, you know, other people like to say, hey, you got that emoji movie, Jeff. Everything should be fine for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand their tone is not. Yeah, it is not a positive go, Jeff, kind of vibe. But here's the thing that people should think about. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Your three movies, I think there's a good chance that your three remaining movies will total 60 million.
They could all bomb. Yeah, they could.
Yeah, Valerian, Atomic Blonde, and
Annabelle Creation.
Yes, so it is plausible. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, you're topping out at about 500 million.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, for me to have a chance, 500 million, because one of those movies could do insanely well. We don't know yet.
Right.
So what that means is my remaining seven movies need to average 57 million each.
Right. Now your Spider-Man and your Despicable Me both could be 100 million.
They both could be 100 million, and War of the Planet of the Apes could be very strong. Just great reviews. We got to focus on all of those great reviews coming in and how you should buy lots
that
of tickets.
Strong. I think Planet of the Apes is the most that can do is like 50 or 60. Is what I think.
If that's the case, that's a downward trend from Rise.
Right. And I think that's usually what happens is the second one opens bigger than the first one, and then the third one drops back down again.
It could. It's all plausible. But I'm just saying I'm not out yet.
Yeah, sure. But then you've got Girls Trip and The Dark Tower are going to flop. Those are both flops.
Girls Trip, Dark Tower, I see those both opening at
maybe 15.
30 to 55.
Maybe 15 each.
Never! No way. Come on, Girls Trip. Come on, Queen.
The emoji movie could go either way.
Yeah, we have no clue. I mean, T.J. Miller thinks it's a hit, but I don't know about trusting him right now with his opinions.
He thought it was a good idea to leave the one show that he's good on.
That's right.
T.J. Miller hosted the Critics' Choice Awards that we attended back in December.
He did.
And he was a bad host.
Yeah.
He was bad at it, and he should feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, beside the point. Dunkirk, you have Dunkirk, which could also go either way. I think that'll be a solid. But again, I think the max for that is like maybe 50 million.
All right, so what is your confidence scale this week? Now that we've got Transformers out of the way, how are you feeling on a scale of 1 to 10? That you are going to win?
I'm still feeling about a 7.
Okay. Wait, were you a 7 last week?
I think I said like 7 or 8.
Okay. Wait a minute.
What?
Shouldn't you be more confident now that my number two movie has not performed well?
No, because the fact that it's your number two movie doesn't matter.
Quit pointing that out. It matters. Otherwise, I will happily trade you Wonder Woman for Girls Trip. If the order doesn't matter.
I'm saying the order has no correlation in predicting the winner. What I'm saying.
Okay.
No, I'm equal, about the same confidence, I guess.
Okay.
And this week, You Are Despicable Me. That'll be a big possible turning point. If it is a big one, then you're better. Still in the game.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be big.
But you just said that number three doesn't normally do as well as the number two, so now I don't feel good. Although maybe this is considered the four because of Minions.
I said there's no correlation.
Oh, no. I thought of sequels.
Oh, the sequels, yeah.
This is the third.
Yeah, I think because of Minions, yeah.
All right.
I don't know.
I know.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think we probably will.
Yeah. And that brings us to the end of the show. Hey, reminder, everybody. We have a new thing called Movie of the Month, where we watch a movie we've never seen before, but we should have.
It's the movie of the month.
Jeff, tell them what the movie of the month is this month.
Sex, Lies, and Only One Videotape.
Yes. Sex, Lies, and Videotape. You have till the end of this month, which is, now, to watch it. And we'll talk about it on next week's show, the first week of July, and tell you what next month's movie is.
So, I can't wait to find out.
If you want to play along, you got, another week to watch Sex, Lies, and or Videotape.
So what did we learn?
Well, we learned today that Baby Driver is pretty fun. We liked that.
Yeah, it is pretty fun.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a movie that you should watch if you like good movies.
I will.
If you don't care what you watch, you can watch Despicable Me 3.
And bring your kids, your neighbor's kids, see it in 3D, see it in whatever the highest ticket price is. That's what you're going to want to do.
That's right. You need this for the summer box office challenge.
Oh, that's right. That was unrelated.
Mm-hmm. The Beguiled is pretty good. And Megan Levy was pretty good. Marina and her dog. I almost said horse. Marina and her horse. That'd be something. Some bomb-sniffing horses.
Oh, man. Horses on the Navy vessels? That's what they need. They need horses.
Out on the ocean?
Just like constantly nervous looking at each other like, buddy, I do not want to be out on this deck.
And then also
this
that
is nerve wracking.
Then in their downtime, the soldiers could play water polo. Until next week, for Movie Us with Aaron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening and good day.
Said good day. Chips Belko, Power Rangers T2.
Yep.
Are those the only four we're talking about?
Yes, and you only saw two of them.
That's right. Now, you don't want to talk about Four Skulls of Jonathan Drake. Okay? All right.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, it does.
Why does he have four skulls? Four? Yeah. Does that mean like four skulls that belong to Jonathan Drake? Like he collected them?
I don't know. It's from Shout Factory. Mm. And it's technically the four skulls.
Now I'm a little intrigued.
I know. I kind of am too. Yeah.